first thing we recognised that we needed to do, and again, this was at the beginning of lockdown, everyone's working home and work boundaries were very, very fluid and blurred in the beginning. And a lot of our team were feeling the pressure of not being able to transition cleanly from work to home and vice versa. And there was a lot of people suffering creatively, you know, because creative people are amazing and they're always thinking, they're always wrestling with problems in their minds, and they need help sometimes to switch off. So we recognised that first thing we had to do, before, if we had any form of ambition to move forward, we had to get our own house in order.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests in Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. I'm excited for today's episode because this is a world that's close to my heart as, you know, somebody who's ran a small, you know, boutique creative agency and media agency for a couple years. And so I think it's always interesting to dive into the purpose behind creative work. And so to do that today, we're going to have Derek Moore with us. He is the CEO of Coffee and TV, calling in all the way from near London, England. Derek, how are you doing today?
Very well, Seth. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. We are looking forward to hearing more about your story and the work that you do. I want to dive straight into something that's mentioned on your website, which is that you are a creative studio with purpose. I know in branding settings, phrases like that often are the result of a bunch of people sitting in a room for a bunch of hours and, you know, talking over words and deciding that yes, this word, not that word. So a creative studio with purpose, I love this because it implies yes, purpose, but it also implies that there's a lot of creative work that is not driven by purpose. So tell me why this phrase to describe the work that you do at Coffee and TV?
It's a really good question. Since you phrased it like that, it has made me think that it could very easily be a marketing stunt, right? We communicate. That's what we do as creatives. And whether you're using words or pictures, you know, that kind of story that you're trying to tell, isn't necessarily authentically, you know, where you come from. But all I can say is that we've lived and breathed our purpose even before we knew we had a purpose. And the studio's kind of grown up around that almost unconsciously. And only very recently, you know, through lockdown, by really looking at what we really cared about and why we're here, did we recognize that not only are we now and moving forward very purpose driven, but actually always have been. We just perhaps hadn't really recognized it as much. Mm-hmm. So purpose can mean lots of things to lots of people, and it's obviously hugely misused and overused in certain aspects of people of companies' marketing. And it certainly isn't a marketing gimmick on our part. You know, we're not necessarily out there to try to win more work or take over the world. It just really sums up the sort of people that work with us. Our team is very purpose centric and care about each other and the culture that we've created and the team spirit that we've built and our impact and hopefully lack of it on the world around us and the people around us. So, you know, creativity is an intrinsic part of how we connect to each other as humans, I think. And, you know, so the creativity and the purpose, they feel very good bedfellows, if you see what I mean.
Right. You said there that purpose can mean different things to different people. What does that word mean to you and your team when you talk about purpose?
Purpose for us is how we connect to each other as people and how we believe and empower the team around us. So what we've noticed is that we tend to attract great talent from other companies, competitors, where they felt disenfranchised or unempowered or burnt out or not valued properly. And by, you know, coming into our culture and being supported and encouraged to push themselves and fail and take time off between really difficult projects so they feel like they're not constantly on that burnout hamster wheel, we've been able to rekindle that sort of spark of joy and life in brilliant people who perhaps didn't even recognize their own brilliance. So that's a real calling for us, a purpose to be able to unleash creative talent that perhaps even the individuals didn't know was there. Mm-hmm. But we need to do that in a way which, you know, is mindful of our place in the world and, you know, how we can use our creativity to tell positive stories about climate change and impact on, you know, social, environmental stuff where we can. But we're not, you know, we're not trying to do be some sort of greenwashing, mm-hmm. camouflage company here. This is just genuinely, authentically what we're trying, what we all believe that we can make a small contribution to, if you say what I mean.
Yeah, I think that's so great. And I think the term greenwashing is became more clear what that is to a lot more people. And even when I started my company 7 years ago, it's, you know, out of a focus of, you know, we want to help companies do a better job of marketing with stories. And that means being authentic. Yeah. I've always kind of felt like if storytelling is the norm, if authenticity is the norm, then there's less places to hide. For companies that are just trying to take advantage of people and just trying to, you know, make as much money off of their clients and people with no thought or consideration to the cost of that. You can't really hide that, because if people are wanting you to tell the stories of impact and authenticity, they're not there, and they're probably there for your competition. So I've always felt like this culture of authenticity, it kind of removes all the hiding places for companies.
Couldn't agree more. And it's the same, I think, for your company as actually for yourself as a, or certainly for me as a leader. It's very easy to try to be the leader that you think you need to be, or to build the company that you think you need to build. And by that ambition is often modeled on someone else or some other company that you've seen as being successful. And actually, by mimicking another person or another company, it's not authentically you, and it doesn't bring your own uniqueness to the role or to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to learn in my own development is how to become an authentic, best version of myself, my authentic person, bring that to work every day. And the same with coffee and TV. We're not trying to become anything other than trying to really find who we really are and tell our story and, you know, live our best lives and be our best selves.
Yeah. So you alluded to some ways that you're maybe making your culture, your company, maybe a place where purpose is paid attention to and where people feel valued. What are some of the ways that you as a leader are being intentional to make sure that your people, that your team feels like there's purpose in their work and that their work matters and that they matter as an individual?
Great questions. And that is what we talk almost like 90% of the time as a company. That's actually what we talk about and how we can do more of all of those things. I think it started before this, but the watershed moment was when we went through B Corp certification, and that gave us a framework and almost like a platform to talk about all of this stuff in a much more open and positive, not that it's not positive, but like a, you know, it's a moving forward kind of way. And with the B Corp certification, you know, so many different people that you wouldn't have expected got involved in changing our company for the better to get the points that we needed to pass, that all of a sudden it became apparent. I should have seen it before, but it became apparent to me that everybody actually really, not everybody, most people really care about this stuff. So for that reason, we, you know, once you're certified as a B Corp, your next step is to continue to improve, right? You won't recertify unless you've improved your score. So we're constantly evolving how we can, that's kind of the guiding light on that side of the purpose, is the, how can we improve our B Corp score, which sounds like a bit of a accountancy formula, like you don't want to be doing this by a spreadsheet, but at the same time, the B Corp spreadsheet is really effective and really, really useful, not just for environmental or sustainable matters, but actually for building a better company. I'm a bit evangelical about the process because it has really made us cast a light on our organization and on our processes and our systems, both environmentally and sustainably, but also just on the, you know, the ergonomics of how we run our company. And every change we've made to be a better company for a B Corp has actually made us a better company anyway. So these two things are really, really work hand in hand. So, you know, we're now, for example, we're trying to green our client list, right, which is a little phrase that we use ourselves, where it's very hard for our company to evaluate the ethics of our clients and our suppliers to some extent, but thinking about just our clients for a minute. It's a constant dialogue that we have. Is this client, you know, trying to do the right thing? Is it a sort of client that we want to work with? You know, how do we judge, right? Because we're not specialists in that areas, you know. So what we do know is that we've got, on a scale, we've got some clients that we're perhaps happy to work with, but would like to improve on, you know, to work with clients who are perhaps more ethically aligned to our purpose than the ones we've got right at the minute. So what we're trying to do is grow our reputation in that marketplace and attract more clients who actually care about the world that we live in and the people we live in it with. And perhaps if we can win more work from those kinds of clients, then we can work less perhaps with the clients that we suspect might not be quite so purpose driven. So that kind of movement is something which we're all trying to watch out for and trying to grow. That, you know, that's the overarching aim of the business. Through marketing, through storytelling, through taking on projects, there's pro bono projects to prove and to help and to support. So we're gradually moving in that sort of direction. That's the kind of stuff that we're thinking about right now.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm curious if there's any other ways or areas in your business that maybe pre-B Corp certification and post-B Corp certification that look very different, or that maybe when you looked at it, you realized like, oh, I didn't necessarily think about being purpose-driven in this area of our business, but once you had that intentionality and that awareness, that you realized there were some things you could adjust.
I mean, all sorts of areas. There's a couple of things that spring to mind. One is that we've moved everybody, all of our permanent staff and most of our freelancers, onto renewable energy. So that, especially this is one of the things through the pandemic, whereas we could move the studio as a whole. Most of our carbon footprint is obviously in the energy we use, the render and the heat that we generate, all that stuff. So whilst we did everything we could to minimize that as a studio, suddenly we've got everybody working from home and they're all plugged into all sorts of different energy sources. So we've funded the transition to get everybody onto 100%. I say this, I'm going to say renewable energy. We want them to be on 100% renewable energy. And sometimes it's not possible, sometimes, you know, but the principle of which we're trying to improve all the time. And even our freelancers, if they're with us for a while, we try to insist that they use a renewable energy supply. And even just that conversation is something which is opening and educating people to that kind of change, which should be, you know, is coming, and it should have happened ages ago.
Right.
One of the other things, a small little example, but the way that we talk to each other has changed. The communication, obviously, again through lockdowns that we've been having, the communication has been absolutely key to keeping the culture strong. And a great example of how that worked was when we were just about to leave the studio, just before lockdown started, we recognized that we had quite a bit of single-use plastic in the studio, right? Small little example, but needed to be dealt with because we needed to get rid of single-use plastic as part of our B Corp certification. So we launched the Slack channel called Single-Use Plastic and invited anybody who wanted to be involved in the elimination of single-use plastic from the studio to join that channel and spot it when they could and communicate and talk and find ways that we could get suppliers to change what they were providing us with and that whole thing. And firstly, it worked really well. So we very quickly eliminated single-use plastic from the studio, which is great, big tick. But the byproduct of all of that was that suddenly we found people from accounts were talking to artists in front, you know, and CG guys and producers and runners and everybody that wouldn't normally build a team together. They were talking to each other about a purpose that they had, that they shared, that they had in common. And that brought, you know, not only those people in that team together, but their teams together. And that kind of collaboration and communication, it was just wonderful to watch from a very small example of a little project that just needed to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of thing that we've been working on.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, all of a sudden you had runners and people in accounting that realized, oh, I actually have things in common with these people that are working on a very different side of the business than me. And I think, you know, realizing that you know, as a matter of expression, I can hang out with more people from work than that just are to the right and left of me.
Absolutely. Exactly that. And younger and older and, you know, yeah, different right. Seniority doesn't matter anymore. You know, it never mattered anyway in our organization, but some people get a bit hung up on that. Mm-hmm. And when you've got a purpose to chase, you know, you're all rowing in the same direction. It doesn't really matter whether you're at the front of the boat or the back of the boat. You just, right. You've all got your job to do. And it's really unifying. It's great.
Yeah. That's great. How long have you been leading the team there at Coffee and TV? And maybe get into kind of the quick version of the origin story of the agency.
Sure. It'll be 10 years this year since we started. I was MD originally. Actually, I was a flame artist originally. So I was making the visual effects myself. And I'd been a flame artist for 25 years, probably before we started. And I set up with three other guys. We're all still equal shareholders, and they are pretty much the best in the business that I'd come across at the roles that they do. So we had another flame artist who was a bit more technical, a CG guy and a producer. And the four of us, you know, decided that we wanted to try something different because we kind of had it with the old way and we didn't know what the new way was, but we just knew we needed to try something. So we set up without a studio. We set up fully remote 10 years ago. I got really busy, attracted some great people, always, you know, made sure we looked after people. We've always been people first. And when you're in the trenches as a soldier, you know, you're always looking after your mates around you. And that's the kind of philosophy that we couldn't do anything other than keep that philosophy in Coffee and TV as we started and as we grew. After a while, I hired an MD because I felt like we were growing as a business and I felt we needed a leader. And unfortunately, I hired somebody who had too much sort of big corporate experience and not small startup experience. That didn't quite work. So when I saw that wasn't working, I realized that I felt like I could do that myself. And I felt like it would be, mm-hmm. I was challenged to do that. And I knew there was a lot of learning and growth to be had. So we hired a flame artist to replace me. I stepped into the MD role, went back to business school, tried to learn how to run a business because I realized I was just making it all up as we went along. Still I am to some extent, but you know, I feel like I've learned quite a bit over the 10 years up to now. But yeah, really had to devote myself to the learning of an entirely new profession. So reading the books, listening to the podcasts such as yours, and you know, there's always somebody who's happy to share their advice and you get little nuggets of wisdom that are appropriate to you at the stage of the journey that you're on. And yeah, we just continue to attract great artists, great producers, great talent, just by caring for them, genuinely caring for them and measuring. You know, we quickly realized that we need to measure stuff, right? One of the business school learnings is you can't improve it if you can't measure it. But rather than just measuring profit, before we even knew about B Corp, we started to measure what's now called the triple bottom line. So we'd measure our profit, of course, because that's the fuel for the engine. We'd also measure our people's happiness. You know, we'd run little surveys and we'd try to systemize the process of making sure that as many people as possible felt as supported, as motivated and as challenged as possible. And we were always about trying to minimize our carbon footprint and our impact on the planet. And we try to measure that as well. So that people, profit, planet, triple bottom line thing was kind of embedded almost from day one. And then when we came across B Corp, it was like, oh shit, okay, right. That's kind of what we're doing already. So let's go and just get the badge. We sew the badge on the sleeve and then we'll look like we're a B Corp certified, right? And then of course you see the impact assessment that you have to go through. And it's like, close the laptop, put that away, come back to it again in a few months' time, you know? But yeah, got there in the end.
What's the story behind the name?
So honestly, we had a different name to start with. We had a bit of a techie engineering name called Redshift to start with, which seemed like a good idea after a few beers in the pub, but it didn't really stick. So our producer, Chris, has always been a massive Blur fan, and he likes... the name, the Coffee and TV name is from the Blur song Coffee and TV. Trust, one of my other founders, and I, he mainly worked on the video for that back in the day with the little milk carton flying up to space. So there's lots of sort of tags on that, but really it was more of a kind of a parody of the industry as we knew it at the time, where we just wanted to have a bit of fun, right? So when our clients came in, the first thing they generally want to have is a decent coffee, and then we'd show them what we were working at on the screen. Like, it was kind of a little bit of a joke. Right. And it just seems to stick, really. It's kind of different, and yeah, I quite like it.
That's great. Yeah, I love it. You mentioned along your journey as an entrepreneur, there's kind of these moments where, you know, whether it's a podcast or a book or some random thing some random person says that stick with you and help move you along as a business owner. And since you went through school, I'm sure there's moments where you realize, you know, this one quote maybe has impacted your journey more than this whole class. Maybe these moments in these classes that stick out. Yeah. The point is there's these seemingly, at the time, you never know that they're going to be significant, like moments of education.
Yeah.
What are some moments, whether it's, you know, class thing, items you learn in classes or conversations with people or books you've read that in your journey that have like stuck out and you know, like, okay, everything kind of changed, whether it was by 100 degrees or 1 degree after this moment?
That's a great question. I wish I had a bit more time to prepare the answer for that one. So off the top of my head, I think I could do this sort of chronologically, and I'll be missing some really important ones, I'm sure. But the first sort of light bulb moment was at Cranfield Business School when I was going to study, you know, business. And I actually had a couple there. One was that they took us through all sorts of academic exercises about trying to define what your key thing was, like, what is it about your business? You know, and we had all sorts of different businesses there, people selling tractors and skateboards and, you know, that our crazy media company. And for me, it was like, oh my God, it's all about the people. Like, if we haven't got amazing people, we haven't got anything. We've just got rooms full of expensive computers that can't actually create anything. So that we took that kind of, you know, really seriously in terms of like recognizing, we always knew that subconsciously, but it's just that kind of really doubling down on what makes great people perform greatly. Something learned in there. There was also as a leader, I don't mind sharing this really. There's two parts to leading. There's the job that you do and the company that you run. There's also who you are as a person and how you show up. And at Cranfield, it was clear to me that I didn't have the confidence to in myself or in my knowledge to be able to lead the business effectively. So I've been working on that in terms of actually building enough inner confidence to be able to show up and be the leader that everyone else needs me to be. So that was a, you know, 180 degree moment, because, you know, I know maybe it's British, maybe it's just me, but we're all very generally quite humble and quite nice, and we just don't like to upset anybody. And that's still the case, but I now feel I'm able to stand up and chat on a podcast to someone like yourself and, you know, maybe share some of the things I've learned, that kind of stuff. So there's a bit of a confidence thing. There's, I think asking for help and drawing on help where you can find it. I've got an amazing sort of life coach, personal coach, business coach. Is the same, sounds like three coaches, same person, but he kind of wears lots of different hats depending on the need at the time. And I think being lucky enough to be able to invest in someone like that to help, who's seen it all before. I think one of the things that's, I think this is a common thing, if you stumble, like we've did, we stumbled across a successful business, you only get really one shot at it in life, right? It's not like we've been able to run, some people, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, Elon Musk, they've been able to run successful businesses many times before, but that's certainly not been the case for me or any of the guys or girls around me. So, you don't want to fuck it up, pardon my French. So in order to try to glean as much experience as possible from those around you, so you don't make stupid mistakes. You know, you can't really, we encourage everyone to learn and make mistakes and, you know, fail fast and fail quickly and learn from that. But when it's your feels like our one shot at this beautiful, amazing business, that you don't want to do anything that would jeopardize that in, you know, a significant way. So being able to have people to pay for brilliant people around you to support you through that journey, I think has been a massive help for me personally. And I'm sure it's worked well for the team. I've read some amazing books. Mindset, the Carol Dweck Mindset book is life-changing.
I haven't heard of that one, so I'll check that out.
Cool. Just about how you can choose, you know, I can't even paraphrase it properly. It's just an amazing, amazing read.
That's great.
Yeah, all sorts of things.
With the confidence thing, I'm curious, are there some practices or things that you're aware of or doing on a regular basis to maybe remind yourself or get yourself back into a place where you are embodying the confidence needed to lead the way that you want to lead?
Yeah, great question. There's two parts to that, I think. One part is you've got to do the work, right? You need to, you can't fake this. You can't pretend, suddenly wake up one day and kind of go, I'm going to be confident today, right? You actually need to have something to be confident about. As a visual effects artist, I felt I was pretty good. Like I've worked on some pretty good stuff over the years, and I didn't really have a confidence issue with that because I was so experienced at it and I knew what I was doing, and that nothing would faze me. I could kind of deal with it. But certainly in the early days of the business, and even now, to some extent, you know, there's always new stuff happening. There's always opportunities to learn, to grow, to screw up. So doing the work is kind of key. So I feel like, because I've read so much, I've listened to so many podcasts, I've gone back to business school, I'm still learning from people around me. RFD is amazing, teaches me so much stuff every day amongst, you know, all sorts of other people that are around. So doing the work, I don't feel I'm by any means the world's greatest, you know, business leader, but I no longer feel the imposter syndrome that I used to have. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really worked for me is meditation. It's to be able to just sit and be still and to feel who I am and lean into that and breathe into that and believe that that's enough. You know, that has been that sounds like a one sentence that changes everything, but it's actually years and years of work. And again, some coaching around that has really helped. So yeah, those two things together, I think, have helped.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I know, meditation and just taking time to rest and be silent and realizing that the times that I usually in my mind, I'm like, I don't have time to meditate.
Yeah.
I don't have time to be quiet. Those are probably the times that work around the most.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as we kind of bring this conversation to a close, I'm curious to how you're looking at the future and even just legacy as far as your business and impact as far as like what you're wanting to build. It sounds like you're very aware of the impact that your company is having. And so I'm curious to how are you looking, you know, 5 years down the road? What are some aspirations or things that you're maybe working towards as a business leader?
Well, one of the great coaches that we worked with during lockdown has helped us to formulate our 20-year plan, right? So obviously, it gets a little bit fuzzier as you go further out. Yeah. But I could paraphrase that for you, actually. It's quite wordy, but each word means something to us. So we are aiming to become a global media family, purpose-driven, founded on love, that aims to unleash the potential of 1,000 magic makers, right? Which, like, wordy sentence, but actually each of those words, you know, we want to be global because our impact needs to be wider than just the UK. And we, you know, we want to be a family. We're not a Netflix kind of come in, if you're not good enough, we'll fire you. You know, we want to support people and grow together. You know, we want to be founded on love. We want to unleash the potential of all these wonderful people that we come across. So that's our sort of mission statement. But to get to that point, there are obviously milestones all the way through. Starting, you know, was from yesterday, the first thing we recognized that we needed to do, and again, this is at the beginning of lockdown, everyone's working home and work boundaries were very, very fluid and blurred in the beginning. And a lot of our team were feeling the pressure of not being able to transition cleanly from work to home and vice versa. And there was a lot of people suffering creatively, you know, because creative people are amazing and they're always thinking, they're always wrestling with problems in their minds and they need help sometimes to switch off. So we recognized that first thing we had to do before, if we had any form of ambition to move forward, we had to get our own house in order. Our first year ambition was to really just get out, you know, sort our own stuff out, make sure that we talk about putting people first. Are we actually putting people first, and how can we measure whether we've done that or not? The measure for us was the year before we'd won. In the UK, there's a magazine called Broadcast. It's the sort of television trade magazine. It's really, really good magazine. They run an annual kind of survey called Broadcast Best Places to Work in TV, and we'd had been mentioned, nominated on that list the year before. And we decided that we would never have, at that point in time, we just wouldn't come anywhere close to it. So we had to implement a lot of changes in order. The goal was that year one was to win that award, which I'm pleased to say on the window sill over there is the little trophy for that. Didn't expect to actually win it. We just thought that by trying to win it, it would help us sort out our internal processes and put people first and really lead that. So year one tick. Year two is like, we now need to show people that we are creative. Like, everyone knows we're a great company in the UK. We've got a reputation of being really nice, really supportive, a good, solid, trusted company, but actually we're amazingly creative. Our artists are amazing. So year two is like, how can we really push our creativity? So there's a whole program of award, you know, measure that with UK awards and trying to make a profit at the same time, because that's quite a rare challenge in this industry. So like, you know, to win an award on a job which actually turns out to be profitable and not just a vanity project. And then in the longer term, we're really trying to find ways to be able to create a true partnership model and to distribute the equity in the success of our company much more equally, much more fairly, so that it's not just being sent back to the shareholders. This is back to the B Corp. It's about all the stakeholders. It's about whether we can find a mechanism, and I think we're really close to it now, to be able to share more fairly the creative effort and the rewards for that amongst the people that are really doing the work and creating the wonderful images. So that's a kind of a mission, is to try to do that differently. You know, it's not just about me and my yacht off the coast of the Mediterranean.
That would be nice.
That would be nice too. But really, I'd rather see the legacy of this wonderful, all my friends and the people I care about. I'd love to see them succeed more already.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you might find yourself in the yacht off Mediterranean and realize, I'd rather be the people
exactly that. Yeah.
Well, I love that you're thinking about the 20-year vision. At our team Historion, we've started defining our 10-year vision. And like you say, the further out you go, the more fuzzy it gets. But if we, you know, the kind of cliche of, you know, if you don't know where you're going, then how do you expect to get there? And so I think that is, I love that that's becoming more of the norm for companies to know, you know, if we have the privilege of being around in 20 years, here's what we want to build, and kind of breaking that down. Mm-hmm. So I think this is great. And, you know, I hope that all of our listeners go and check out some of your work. For those that are listening, you know, I know you're based in the UK, we're in the States, but who are the brands that you love working with? And that if somebody is listening and they're like, man, I really want to get in touch with these people, here's kind of the perfect creative partner to work with.
Well, do you know what? Anybody who's up for investing in the creative process, like what we do isn't cheap. We have a lot of brilliant people, and great creativity takes time. So it has a cost attached to it. So we're not for everybody. We're certainly not the most expensive in the market. But we work a lot with creative agencies. So if any of your listeners work for creative advertising agencies, then we're definitely, they will already be a long way along the creative process, and we can then bring their vision to life with imagery. We're also doing much more work directly with brands, like big brands now, who know that they need better and faster and cheaper content, and the process of creating something standout, you know, it's only standout if it feels to me like it's the creative process is so much more efficient, the fewer people are involved in that chain, right? If you've got somebody in that creative process saying, I want it to be black, and you've got someone else saying, I want it to be white, and you end up having to make it gray, it doesn't stand out, right? So if brands working with studios like us directly means that the creativity stays pure, and it's faster, and is therefore more cost effective. So if you've got some ambitious brands listening to you who want to create some killer content affordably, but it's still going to cost something, you know, but we can make amazing stuff, and cut out some of the chain, which that whole approval process is really can sometimes hamstring the creative process. So and broadcasters, like we've just done the Formula One title sequence for Sky in the UK, and that's an amazing piece of work. So that kind of stuff is right up our street.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a big podcasting industry conference coming up in London that I'm bummed I'm not going to, but maybe next year. So, I think that's wonderful. Well, we will certainly have ways to get in touch with you and links to your website in the show notes. And that for those that are listening, it is coffeeand.tv. Derek, this has been wonderful. I really appreciate your generosity of your time and also just sharing some about your journey along the way. And I hope that our listeners can be encouraged with kind of the journey that you've gone on of, you know, identifying what that word purpose means, how it's more than just, you know, your philanthropy. It really is all encompassing. So thank you so much for your time today. And thanks for joining us on the Small Business Storytellers.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.